Hi, and welcome back to the Childhood Development Initiative's Restorative Practice podcast, where we talk all things RP. For this second season, we resume visiting communities and organisations to collect stories from practitioners around Ireland. We talk to young people, teachers, lecturers, youth and community workers, and restorative practices trainers to gather their insights on the impact of RP in their life and work. Each episode is focusing either on a place with several voices or on a practitioner. If you are not familiar with restorative practices, the restorative approach, the restorative questions, and the work CDI does, you can listen to the first episode of season one of our podcast series where it is all explained.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Danu, Restorative Practice Quality Specialist for CDI, and I'm delighted to be back on the road for this second season of Circles of Connection. For this episode, I went to Ennis, County Clare, and met with Brian McManus, Youth Work Manager in Clare Youth Service, Adriana, Youth Justice Worker in Kilrush, and a young person whom she is currently working with. They talked about the work they do and what RP brings to it, especially to the core relational element of youth work. The young person shared her experience of the service. And we also talked about an exciting project aiming at transforming the town of Kilrush into a restorative community. First, I interviewed Brian. Thank you very much, Brian, for agreeing to take part in this podcast. Please, could you introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name is Brian McManus. I'm a youth work manager in Clare Youth Service and have been here now for 20 years involved in youth service. It's about young people. We work with primarily young people who are between, say, the ages of 12 and 17, 18, and also then with those up to 24. And what we do is we offer all young people a chance to have some time to build relationships with workers and volunteers that they would find constructive and positive. So what we do, we just offer young people a safe space to come and a place where they can be themselves and explore what they need, you know, in terms of their lives. So we meet them where they're at. We ask them to direct the work that we do with them. And from there, then we just see where it goes. If they want to just sit and chat, that's fine. If they want to just sit, that's fine. If they would like to do something around issue based, for example, if somebody said they want to change something within their own lives or within society, then we offer options for that through, you know, projects like Cor and the Nogue. Or if they're into music and they want to find expression through music, well, then we do that as well, you know. And we also offer a formal second chance education through our community training centre. So young people to do other qualifications, including Leaving Cert Applied, for example. They would come to the centre here during the daytime. So by day, it's in Carmody Street, it's in Ennis here, it's formal training. And then by evening and night, it's informal youth work or non-formal youth work. And then we work around the county. So we have bases in Shannon, another one in Ennis, Kilrush, Killaloe, 6 Mile Bridge. There are various towns throughout the county. And then we operate a wide network. We have 17 youth clubs that are primarily run by volunteers. So we have, you know, maybe nearly 300 volunteers in total working with young people across those 17 youth clubs, as well as the youth workers. And we would be a volunteer-led organisation. Our board are all volunteers. So the number of actual youth workers and tutors is relatively small compared to the number of volunteers who would work with the young people. It's all voluntary. So one of the cornerstones of youth work is that it is voluntary for us. That is a deal breaker when somebody is referred. So we have young people who are referred, for example, to the Youth Diversion Project, maybe from Juvenile Liaison Officer in the Gardaí or from some other organisation. The referral comes, but they don't have to be here. We make it very clear to them that at any point they can leave. They're not compelled to be here. We have had the odd judge over the years, you know, come and say, we want to put this young person on your program as part of some justice procedure with them. And the answer is always no. You know, the youth work is voluntary, and that's what gives it its power, I think, you know, is that the young people know that they are in control of whether they stay or they go. Usually they stay, and that's what we find. And it's because it is voluntary, but that's absolutely sacrosanct to us.
And so what place do restorative practices have in this organization?
I would argue that restorative practice is at the base of the organization, at the center of it, and always has been. The first time I came across the concept of restorative practice was maybe 12 or 13 years ago in Dublin. It was a conference. I went up listening to the experience of Hull as a city and thought this was fantastic. But everything that was said, every piece of the work around restorative practice, the ethos, the values, the actual practice, the methodology, everything just struck me as being youth work at its core. You know, for me, it's the two overlap so much that what restorative practice provides us with is, I suppose, a structure to hang on and a language maybe that's easier for other people to understand what we're trying to do sometimes. Youth workers have always been accused of being a bit wishy-washy, a bit, you know, not being able to explain what they do. And at a training once with the what were then called the Gardaí Youth Diversion Projects, the trainer asked the Gardaí in the room, the JLOs, to explain what they did, and asked the youth workers to explain what they did. And the Gardaí explained it very, very simply in two sentences. That was the idea. And the youth workers started off, well, I'm not. And but what they did was they explained what they weren't. They weren't teachers, they weren't Gardaí, they weren't this, they weren't that, they weren't social workers. And everybody looked around going, that's ridiculous. You know, we should be able to express who we are and what we do. And I think in terms of the way we work, the restorative practice language is very, very helpful, especially when you want to, as we're trying to do in Kilrush now, which is to involve the whole town and to have a restorative town. It means then that there's a language that's common to everybody. But for youth workers, for me, the crossover is just, it just maps perfectly on. And I have been looking for restorative practice to be introduced for a number of years now into our as I say, what were called Gardaí Youth Diversion Projects, now called Youth Diversion Projects. And those projects now, we have people training in all across the country. And Adriana, who you'll be talking to, is one of those trainers. You know, I was delighted to see it coming. I would have pushed quite hard for it to be part of the practice for all of those youth justice workers. And it's also, say, we've introduced it to our organization. So training for different people and then involved with the Kilrush project as well. If you do try to put youth work into a couple of things, it is about relationships and that safe space that the young person has, which means you have to, you know, we've just put a piece of work together where the young people have given us back their reflections on what it's like to work with our youth workers. And one of the things that comes out constantly is a non-judgmental approach. You know, they say when they go in, they feel they can say what's happening truthfully in their lives. There's not going to be that judgment. They're going to be challenged, yes, they are going to be challenged, but they know it's not coming with this heavy judgment involved, that there's a level of respect when they go in, and that they feel that they can say what they need to say and also find out how to say it, because sometimes for young people it can be difficult to maybe say exactly what they're thinking, like all of us, I suppose, but it's that the youth workers give them that space. And then they try and help them work it through. And then they, young people have also said, the fact that they're at the center of making the decisions. So whether we have a group who are deciding to go to the cinema and you say, okay, well, what are we going to see? The youth worker doesn't pick it, the young people pick it and so on. And they have some sort of democratic process in order to make it happen. Or whether you're saying to somebody who is in trouble with maybe addiction or family issues or school or with the Gardaí, what plan are you making here? It starts with them deciding, well, this is what I need to do for myself and this is how I get there. And that can take a long time, the very, very start, because you're not going to tell them what to do, even though you sit there and you need to stop doing this or you need to start doing this. You don't do that because that doesn't work. The young person has to take it from within themselves, and they have to decide to make those decisions. And that's, and that is essential to both youth work, good youth work practice, and good RP practice.
In this second interview, you'll hear a young person who is working with Adriana and talks about her experience. Thank you very much for agreeing to take part in this podcast. Please, can you tell us a bit more about yourself and the work you do with Adriana?
I am a 17-year-old girl. I've been working with Adriana for 2 years on the project, and I work full-time as a commis chef. We meet up once a week for a little catch-up. We also do some fun projects sometimes. So far, we've done personal training, artworks, and a youth master chef, which I won. She is a person who I can rely on in any situation. She is someone I can open up to and makes me feel safe. I can trust her with anything. It is very important for a young person to have an adult that you can trust and who won't judge you, who you can tell all your problems to, and they'll listen and try to help you instead of making you do a different decision and or such. As I said before, it is very important for a young person to have someone who doesn't judge you and who you can actually trust and know they won't go back and tell your mom or you know, such as. It's just really great to have someone there, you know, something to look forward to if you're feeling low. You're like, okay, we're meeting, let's say on a Wednesday, it's Monday, okay, only 2 days and I can finally talk to someone when you have no one else to talk to. That's where the building relationship came in, because I obviously didn't start blabbing to her about everything. It took time to build the trust between us. We met a few times and then I was like, all right, she's actually nice. And now it's been 2 years. So
what have you learned from your work with Adriana?
To control my emotions and to speak about them and to come to solve my problems in a more mature way and think about it before I make the decision.
So what are the things you like the most about the work you do with Adriana, and what are the things that you find challenging?
I really like having someone that I can honestly open up to and to have absolute freedom about it. I don't have to do anything that I'm uncomfortable with, and it's all on my terms. The first meeting was challenging because you don't know who you're going meeting or what are they going to be like. So that was the most challenging thing. It also takes a while to build a strong and trustworthy relationship with someone you don't know. So it all takes time.
How is it, or is it different from other youth organizations you've been involved in, like schools? Like, I don't know if you've done other youth services or youth club.
I have been to CAMHS before, and it is absolutely different, because with CAMHS, I didn't want to do it and I had to go there with my mom, and I felt personally like they were more there for my mom than me. And they just kind of tried to tell me what to do and what not to do. And in the end of the day, neither me or my mom wanted to go there. I'd agree on something beforehand and go ahead with it just to get out of there. I was never a bad student. I was a bit slow on homework, but in class, I never failed any exam in school. I liked all the teachers. All the teachers liked me. It was just the drama, the teenage drama that was too much for me personally. And I never had any trouble with bullying in school or the work was too hard. I could always handle it. I pretty much just sat in class. As long as I listened in class, I would have passed all the exams. But the breaks, this one is talking this and this one is talking that, was too much for me.
So what are your hopes for the future when you have finished work with Adriana?
I would like to become a head chef, finish my courses. I'm supposed to be going on an apprenticeship in September to become a head chef, culinary arts level 5. So I sort of want to be a chef. But then if that doesn't work out, if it turns out to be too much stress and such for me, I would like to be a tattoo artist. So after I do my chefing course, I would like to do a tattoo artist course as well.
And is there any question that you would like to ask Adriana about how she works with you?
How does she put up with me?
I enjoy every single minute of it, every day. I look forward to it.
Then I interviewed Adriana about her approach. Thank you very much, Adriana, for taking part in this podcast. Please, can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
So my name is Adriana Meir, and I am a youth justice worker on the Kilrush Youth Diversion Project for about 16 years now. So I work with young people between the ages of 12 and 18 who have either who are at risk of becoming involved in antisocial or criminal behaviour or have received cautions for this.
And so what is your approach when working with young people?
I suppose the most important thing for me when I'm working with young people is that I meet them where they are at, like not where I would like them to be or somebody else would like them to be. So in my work, I would have a very strong focus on the values that kind of underpin the restorative approach of respect, responsibility and relationship. So I suppose when I speak about respect in my work, I don't essentially mean like that when somebody says something to you, you just don't roll your eyes up, or if you're in a situation, you just don't respond in a negative way. I kind of mean respect on a deeper level. So what I mean is I'm trying to say that you're working with a young person in a space where they feel their dignity and worth is recognized. So then how we try to do that is by providing conditions that support inclusion, safety, fairness, and just support really. And also just providing opportunities where young people can kind of develop their self-worth. Because it all starts from in here. Another important aspect of the role of our work is that the participation in the project is 100% voluntary. And I suppose that's essential for us. All young people are involved in all decision-making in the project. Their views are always listened to. Doesn't mean that it always works out that you get what you want, or it's not always the end result that you want, but you will feel heard. We also try our best to provide like as much clarity as we can about why certain decisions are made, and let young people have their say then about how they feel about that decision. We also try to be very clear on structures and boundaries, so everybody knows what will happen next, when it will happen, and also expectations. And that's what a young person can expect from me, but also what my expectations are from them. Another key element would be the relationship piece. So we really, really take the time to kind of connect with each young person on whatever level it is that they want. So I would have some young people that I would have quite a deep connection with. And then I have others that prefer to keep it more on a lower level. And that's absolutely fine, because that, again, is about meeting them where they're at. And another thing that we look at then as well is that like responsibility piece. But it's not about assigning blame, as in you did this, so then this is the consequence or anything like that. It's just about owning your bit. This happened, and this was my piece in it. So if we do something that negatively impacts on somebody, then we have a responsibility to respond to that, and then we move on. So really, what I'm trying to say is that like the problem is the problem, the person is not the problem, and that's somewhat kind of the approach that I like to try and take.
What I'm wondering is that when you got trained, I think in the past couple of years, mm-hmm. what more did it bring to your work and to your approach?
Well, it really actually made me reflect on what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. Like, what am I actually trying to do? Because I've been doing this for a long time. So I think it's really like it's enhanced my practice and it's brought value to my practice. I suppose the use of circle work has been beneficial to build relationships and support that sense of community building. And so when I say circle work, what I really just mean is like a safe space with participants and a facilitator. So it's in a circle, so like everyone can see everybody else, and just maintain that circle to give integrity to the work. So I suppose there's equality because everybody's seated in the same place and everyone in the circle is equal. And then there's trust in that nothing's hidden, and there's nothing hidden in the circle, but also in the preparation of the reason why we were coming into the circle. Everybody knows exactly why we're there and what the end game is. And then my role as a facilitator in that then, which I have to work on and I do work on every day, is I'm there to facilitate the circle, not to lecture or not to share my opinions on the circle, but just to facilitate. I'm a work in progress. And then it's just building that connection. So like everybody listens to everybody else. And also what it showed me in my, you know, I've had to reflect on my progress and say, like, my default setting when it comes to this work, like, since I've gotten into it, since I've been very young, has, oh, I need to fix everything. Someone has an issue, I need to come with the answer. We need to fix it as fast as possible. So RP has really made me just more aware of that. Like, I wasn't doing anything wrong, but there's a few thing ways that you can do things, and it wasn't probably the best right way to do it. So it made me challenge myself to do better, really. So I try as much as I can now to provide, like, high levels of accountability, but high levels of support to kind of balance that off. So I'm doing things with young people instead of doing things for young people, which, you know, there's a space for that, but, like, not all the time. We have to empower people for the long term. And that really then kind of links back to the respect piece and the values piece that we were kind of speaking about earlier. Like, the aim is really to get the young person to shape and inform their own outcome. So it's their plan. It's not my plan. Because they're the ones that are going to be impacted by the decisions that are made anyway. I'm going home to my own house, you know. And also in restorative practice, I suppose, we, you know, in my job, I only have a certain amount of time with each person. I'd love to have loads of time with everybody, and I'd love to have loads of time to give my colleagues and all the other young people, but, like, I don't. So restorative practice has kind of given me a structure or a framework for conversations to help somebody just to, like, to get to a result that they will find useful. So, like, I find that this framework is particularly useful in a conversation where someone is stuck, like, they're stuck with a particular issue. And it's fairly basic, like, it's fairly straightforward. So the person identifies what they feel would be the most important issue for them to talk about in the time available that they have. And then we just explore the current reality, but they explore it more so. And then we just kind of capture a picture of what's really going on for them. And then the person explores their options. And I suppose when that little piece is over, there's an opportunity for me to say, well, may I suggest, I'm not sure that you came up with there such and such an option, but it's not, they're not my options because it's not my issue. And then we just finish up the conversation, and it's just about committing to specific actions. And, like, there's no problem. Like, there could be actions for me identified by the young person for me within that, but they're not actions that were identified for me for the young person. So it's about just taking ownership, and it's that responsibility piece again. I'm going all around the houses now, but they're just a few examples of how RP has impacted and continues to impact on my professional development.
What's your hope for RP in this field of work?
Well, I'm actually a restorative practice trainer with the Youth Diversion Projects. So I suppose the vision really is kind of just to bring an awareness of the restorative practices approach to a broad spectrum. So we can kind of embed it into the YDP practices and really support restorative practice as a mechanism so people can have the chance just to speak, and then people can have the chance to listen. Like, RP is sincere, it's genuine, and it's, like, it's an authentic approach. And it can bring people to a table that may not necessarily ever have had sat at a table before, you know, in a really safe space. So their voice can be heard, but, like, it equally, if not as important, it's an opportunity to listen and be heard. So the hope, I suppose, is just to, like, embed the awareness of the approach across our network of YDPs, and hopefully in time then beyond that.
Great. Thank you very much. Lastly, Brian introduces the project aiming at moving Kilrush towards becoming a restorative town.
For me, place is very important. Okay. And a sense of place and having, you know, that pride. When we talk to people in Kilrush and we started to put out the idea that the town would be a restorative town, that the town would take an approach to trying to improve the relationships between not just young people, but everybody in the town. It did capture the imagination, because whether you're from the town or whether you work in the town, you get very emotionally involved in what happens. And the town has got some, you know, pretty bad press over the years, and there's a lot of issues there which you wouldn't expect to find in a sort of a small west of Ireland rural town for various reasons. And, you know, people were saying, well, yeah, we want to help to change that, because we know the good that's here, we know that people are decent, and we want to be able to do, but we know there are issues. And at the heart of some of those issues are the way maybe some elements of the society are treated by people in general. And if we can change that dialogue and change that conversation, it was felt that we could move the whole town, not just those people, which, you know, you wouldn't be referring in that way, you'd actually be going, we're all part of this, and try to bring everyone together. So that was the idea. So the Children and Youth Services Committee in Clare had some funding, and some ideas on the Connected and Respected Committee, of which I'd be part of. The RP idea was thrown out, and some of us had experience before, and we said, yeah, like, we think this would be a good idea. And then to and froing over how it would be done, and then eventually we decided we'd try and train as many of the practitioners in the town as possible. So last year we had over 40 people trained in the sort of basic restorative practice methodologies and ideas. And next month in April the 18th, bring all those people back together to see how far everybody's got. And we know that some people, you know, haven't really been able to use it because of various reasons, and we know that other people have within their organizations really taken it on board. So the local Youth Reach, for example, I know has, and they're hosting us, they found it really, really helpful. A couple of the primary schools, the youth service, we use it now. And even sort of within the youth service, from the training in Kilrush, our next youth work team meeting, it was in Kilrush, just by chance we moved it around, and it was set up as a restorative meeting. So all the rest of the youth workers were introduced to how this happens in practice, and they were really impressed. So they're all looking for the training to be put into place as well. As well as that, Joe Power, who's been doing the facilitating and training with us, has been involved in running a training for trainers in Clare. And I know he's involved in other areas outside of Kilrush, but he ran one in Kilrush. And now we have a trainer who is just about to finish the final process, and we'll be able to hopefully train up more people as well. So that's the start of it. I say it is a little slow because there's a lot that's needed to shift cultural change, you know, and it's easy in certain organizations because that the basis was already there. In other places it can be more difficult. Some of them, even just the sheer size, like the county council are involved and the people there are training, but for them they operate within a much wider organization, for example, than say a primary school that can work within its own boundaries, whereas from the council it's much more difficult. So it's just a way of trying to find how do we look at the challenges that those people faced and how do we bring it on. And that's what we're trying to do on the 18th, just to bring everyone back together and see where we can go from there. And then the next step after that is to open it up to volunteers and organizations, for example the rugby club in Kilrush, the drama, you know, the sailing club or whatever, and see can we get those people involved, and then just keep the ripple going that little bit further. I could practically tell you what was said to me when I heard about Hull the first day, because I happen to know the city because of friends who were there, and I know some of the issues that they faced and how they managed to sort of pull it together. I know it's not lasted fully, but it's still the idea of how it was done and how each area in society was involved. So you try and involve the whole society, otherwise I think it only works just on a small basis. But if you think big, you know, hey, maybe we can do that. And if Kilrush works, well, then we're thinking, why not the rest of Clare? You know, it is definitely something that is a way of working with people and sort of, I suppose, living your life a little bit that should be open for everybody to be able to take part in, I think.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our show.